You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome everybody to Locked On Lakers. I am your host, Harrison Fagan. Just as a quick reminder, you can find the show on iTunes, Megaphone, Panoply, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Alexa, Spotify, anywhere podcasts are bought and sold, pretty much. If I didn't list it, we probably also have the podcast on there, and I just forgot to mention it, because this is not normally my job. But thankfully, today is my last day filling in for Anthony as the host, who is doing these intros and reads and things like that. And joining me, and we are getting a massive upgrade on the co-host front, is Pete Zayas, a.k.a. Laker Film Room, a.k.a. Coach Dad, a.k.a. my internet dad, of Foreign Blue and Gold and Laker Film Room. How's it going, Pete?
I'm doing well, man. You sound just like Darius. I'm kind of confused God. Right now.
Ooh, I don't understand where this started from. This like whole I sound like Darius thing. Like it's kind of amazing to like. Do you hear it? Because I've been asking people like that talk to me on a regular basis. I guess you're probably most qualified because you've probably talked to a combination of Darius and I more than anyone else. So like you're the Venn diagram here. Do we actually sound alike?
You have certain qualities to your voice that I can understand why people like pick up on them, but it's also like you said, you are two of the people that I talk to the most in this world. So it's kind of like asking, you know, a mom if they can tell their twins apart. You know, like when everybody else has a hard time doing that. Like to me, you guys don't sound that much alike. No,
so you actually just made the parenting analogy. So it's not me making the weird joke, I guess.
Right, and I'm the mom this time, I guess.
Yeah, Pete Zayas, my internet dad and mom.
Yes,
he's very versatile.
It's 2018. Hey, you know, gender is a construct, right?
Yeah. So I actually did not, believe it or not, that is not what I brought you on the podcast to discuss, our thoughts on gender roles in 2018 society. We are actually here to talk about, I mean, first off, the big thing I think in the news, by the time that people are listening to this is definitely still going to be a thing if it doesn't heat up even more. We're recording this Thursday morning, and this is right as the Kawhi Leonard rumors, I guess, are starting to heat up, because there was always kind of speculation throughout the season, right? That like Kawhi, it just seemed like he was unhappy with the Spurs, and the only reason it wasn't getting more attention, I think, was because it's Kawhi and it's the Spurs, and Kawhi doesn't talk, and the Spurs are widely seen as this like incredibly stable organization, and like trade demands, that just doesn't happen here, like that kind of thing. But there seemed to be this unhappiness, and there was always speculation, like Kawhi is a Southern California guy, the Lakers have a lot of assets. If he becomes disgruntled enough, is this a thing where he could end up, you know, demanding a trade? And could he end up with the Lakers? Could they be a natural suitor? And there was like kind of natural speculation. And that was all connecting dots until this morning we got our first rumor from the Sporting News that, you know, like there are executives around the league that are saying that they think that this is something that's going to happen. And so, you know, like, I guess my first thought, you told me you're planning to talk about this on your own Laker Film Room podcast, so I don't want to get too much into it, but just your overall thoughts on Kawhi as a player and how you think that he would fit in with the Lakers were this to come true.
So, in terms of him as a player, like, he's fantastic. He's a top five guy in the league, and I think that's easy to forget after him being, you know, barely playing at all this season. He's 26 years old and has already been the best player on a championship team. Like, there's nothing theoretical about that. Like, Paul George is more of a question mark. Like, I don't think Paul George can be your best guy on a title team. Kawhi already has been. And now that's within a, you know, great organization and with good vets and on a, you know, on a Spurs team that was, you know, constructed and had continuity and all of these different things. But Kawhi is really, really, really good. And he fits in whatever type of system or whatever it is that you want to do. the interesting thing about him as a person, and you alluded to this at the beginning, is we know so little about him, and the Spurs have been historically so insular in terms of their, you know, like things don't, like this don't get out normally. And like LaMarcus Aldridge was one of the first things that did that. It's easy in this Kawhi situation to kind of like,
just really quick with the LaMarcus stuff. Even then it was flipped around as, look how stable they are. He sat down one sit down with Pop and he rescinded his trade demand. Like it was that narrative is very much there that like, this just doesn't happen with the Spurs. And so even when it does happen, it's used as evidence that it doesn't happen.
Yeah. So in the circumstances are so unusual, and Kawhi has barely said, you know, two words in a good year, that it's easy to fill in the blanks with him. As we've got my Peanut is making another guest appearance on Lockdown in the background.
Hey, recurring guest Peanut, where, you know, we're always happy to have the entire Film Room family on Locked On Lakers.
Yeah, and then Charlie Film Room is sitting here waiting when he busts it out. That's going to be the jump scare for everyone with the 100-pound dog. So.
My apologies. Hey, like, you know, if you don't have a minor panic attack while you're listening to this show on your drive to work, then we haven't done our job. So maybe you can get some sirens going in the background. Like, we can just add those sound effects, make people think they're being pulled over,
and that'll get different sounds out of my dogs too. They love a good siren. So
like really quickly here in a second, I want to continue this conversation and talk about like kind of what it means going into the off season for the Lakers, because I think it was like before it was very clear what their plan A was, and then now, you know, there's maybe a little bit more wiggle room there in how they decide to approach the summer. So I want to talk about that here in a second. Okay, so this kind of throws a wrench into, I mean, not a wrench, it's a good problem to have. It's like, it's good to have more options than to not have more options, but it does complicate the offseason a little bit, even more, and what was already going to be a complicated offseason with, you know, the cap gymnastics of trying to preserve cap room to maybe keep Julius Randle and go after Paul George and LeBron James, and then now, like, throwing in, you know, maybe you have this chance to trade for Kawhi. That's kind of shifting things around even more. So I guess, like, I'm curious for your thoughts on that. Like, you know, obviously you think very highly of Kawhi. Like, all things being equal, what is your dream scenario for this offseason, like, and how it works out?
What I would like the Lakers to come out of this offseason, and a combination of this one and next, I want a team that's a sustainable title contender. It's probably my biggest concern with bringing LeBron on board is that LeBron's amazing, right? But he'll be making $35 million in the first year and with 4.5% raises for as long as he wants. Maybe he continues to do the one plus one type deals. But if he wants a full 4-year max, of course, he's going to get that.
And at some point, you'd think he's going to take it, because like there's going to come a point where that financial security outweighs the freedom to just choose your own destination every summer.
Absolutely. And so if LeBron agrees to a, you know, 4-year deal that starts at $35 million a year, and then, you know, 4 years from now, he's making $43, $45 million a year when he's 37 years old or so, you know, how long is the window for that? So to me, a dream offseason would involve Kawhi and Paul George, because they're at that age of, you know, 26 to 28 years old is what they'll be by the time they hit the offseason, that you can put them alongside, because the Lakers have a lot of young guys, right?
Yeah.
And the thing about trying to get Kawhi, though, is that a couple of them are probably going to have to go out. But for me, like,
because
Kawhi,
they have to go out in the Kawhi trade, unless he came as a free agent next summer. But, like, I would think the Spurs are smart enough that if this was getting that bad, they'd try to move him. Like, they seem – they act decisively on this stuff, like, for better or worse.
Kawhi to me is a guy that you got to move on. If he's on the market and he wants to be at your place, like, there's a long storied history of disgruntled stars wanting to get out of their, you know, their home. Even Paul George, you know, one summer ago, Laker fans, I think we probably felt a little more confident than we do now with some of the things that George has said in the media. Now, you know, those are things he has to say, but, you know, if another team trades for Kawhi, say Boston trades for Kawhi, does he stay there? You know, does he say, hey, this is a pretty good deal and I'm alongside Hayward and Kyrie. We've got ourselves a pretty easy path to the finals. You know, I would guess going forward that Philly is the biggest hurdle for Boston going forward. And, you know, does he say, hey, I'm going to stay here? There's value in making the move for the guy now. So to me, Kawhi is one of those guys that you you pull the trigger on.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is like, I mean, I think both of us got this tweet this morning, and I've seen a lot of this sentiment going around of like, don't give up assets for these guys, you know, when you can just sign them as free agents. But it's like you said, it's not a guarantee that you can sign them as free agents. And to me, this is different than people preaching patience on Paul George for a couple of reasons. Number one is the more confidence, like you said, that I think Laker fans had that Paul George would be coming. And I think number two is the caliber of player involved and the stage in the Lakers rebuild that we're at. Last summer, you know, it wasn't exactly clear how far this team was away from contention. Now we've kind of seen that these young guys are ready to at least compete now. Like, they might not be ready to win a title now or lead a team to a title by themselves right now, but they're ready to play on a competitive team, which I think changes the calculus in terms of, can you give up one or two of them, or like at least a couple assets, to be able to get a player like Kawhi, who is better than Paul George. And so not only, like, and this is all, again, like, obviously pending a clean bill of health for him, but if you can trade a couple guys for a guy like that when you're already kind of ready to, like, take that next step and be pushed over the top, like, that's a pretty good reason in and of itself to do it. And that's without even mentioning that, you know, the potential implications of being able to make those moves and then, like, have him as a guy that you can say, like pitch to free agents, like, hey, look at this guy that we have. And you can come and play alongside him. He was an MVP candidate just at, like, a year ago. I think he finished third in MVP voting.
Yeah, no, to me, Kawhi's a top five guy in the NBA. I think the only guys that I would put clearly above him are LeBron, Durant, Steph, and maybe Harden. Like, and that's with Harden just having an MVP season. Like, Kawhi is really, really, really good. And so, I would probably put him fifth in the NBA as in terms of if I was ranking players. Like, and so when you can get that type of guy who, again, has already been the best player on a championship team, like, you don't have, even with a guy like Harden or a guy like Westbrook, can they be the best player on a championship team?
I'm not so sure about that anymore with Westbrook.
Yeah, like, I know that to be true about Kawhi Leonard. And those guys just don't come on the market very often.
Yeah, that's 100% true. And, like, so I think we can kind of, like, I will let you save the rest of your Kawhi talk for your pod with Darius. You were generous enough to come on here anyway. I guess the other thing that I'm curious about, so let's say the Lakers can't make that happen. They can't get him in the building this summer. Like, what is your, like, you know, if they can't get LeBron and Paul George, like, what would you say, like what would be your plan B if you were running the team?
I think that the best thing they can do this summer, if they're not able to get those guys, is to leverage the fact that they have the most cap space in the league, in a league that does not have a lot of cap space collectively. So there are certain teams around the league. So, for example, Washington Wizards are en route to getting smoked again in the first round and are right on the precipice of being a luxury tax team while having to maybe extend Kelly Oubre, and make other financial decisions. Do you take on a Gortat type of guy along with, you know, while getting a first round pick in return to alleviate some of the tax burden? There are teams like that around the league, OKC being another team, although there aren't a lot of deals that make sense, even if Paul George goes back to OKC, for the Lakers to help, you know, alleviate some of that burden. But there's a lot of teams, Portland being another example, who might get stunned in the first round by the Pelicans, that are either in luxury tax territory or on the precipice of it. They could really use some financial flexibility. If the Lakers could do that, they did that with Jeremy Lin a couple years back, where they
And Hibbert.
And Hibbert, right. Those are the type of deals where if you want to punt toward 2019 and you got Jimmy Butler coming up and you want to make your run at Kawhi then instead, while collecting some assets and keeping the young core together, to me, that's the best plan B, even if it's not the sexiest.
Yeah, and I think some people, like, there have been some people that said, oh, well, like, Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, like, that'd be the same plan as the last regime. Like, they wouldn't want to do that. They want to win now. Like, but I think if anyone has the job security to make that plan work, even, like, with the brazenness of, like, hey, I criticized Jim Buss from afar nonstop for, like, his entire tenure, and we're about to just do the same thing that they were doing, it's Magic Johnson. Because Magic Johnson's not going to get fired. Like, Magic Johnson can go out there and test this, and, like, Pelinka, the same thing. Like, these guys are, there are no whispers, nothing. Like, they're fairly bulletproof right now. So, like, if there's a time to try a plan like that, like, this is it. And especially, like, even with what I just said about these young guys being ready to play on a competitive team now, we saw that they can be relatively competitive without these big names right now. There's no reason that they couldn't kind of kick this forward, I think, another year and go after the guys that you're saying to go after and make just as appealing of a pitch, if not more, with these guys, all of the rookies having another year to grow in the NBA.
Absolutely, but they need to pull the trigger by next offseason, because you start getting into, by the 2020 offseason, that's when Ingram is due his extension, and Deng comes off of the books, but you start getting into more problematic situations from a cap perspective where you're not able to add those max guys. So to me, it's this summer or the next where that really needs to happen.
Yeah, these guys cease to become cheap assets and they start to become paid like the guys that you're trying to recruit.
Exactly.
So I want to talk a little bit more about that just here in a second. Okay, so with all that said about the Lakers need to make a move this summer or next summer, I guess the logical next question to ask is, you know, we've all said positive things about these young guys and how good they can be all season. And I think especially like Lonzo, I think there's been a lot of back and forth about, like, is he good enough to be one of these star guys? And so I guess my next question for you is just after watching all of these guys for another year, and really, like, you can almost throw Ingram's first year out just because, like, of how young he was. Like, I feel like the player Ingram was this year is a lot more of, like, a realistic sample size of what he could be going forward than his first year in the league, just because of the growth he made over one NBA offseason. But if they stand pat and they can't get these guys, which would obviously be, like, a pretty big black mark on this front office, who has promised, like, so much that they're going to be better recruiters, they're going to get stars to come back to LA again. But, like, let's just say, like, doomsday scenario, that doesn't work out. Do you think that this group is good enough to build around while just adding, like, competitive player, like, good role players around them as they grow? Like, do you think that these guys will be able to kind of reach a contention ceiling, you know, just adding more draft picks and adding a couple other good players, but not superstar players?
Contending for an NBA title, no. I think that historically you've had to have one of the best three players in the NBA or a phenomenal collective. If the Lakers were to win a title, it would be more in the phenomenal collective type of sense. I do think that Lonzo is special. I think he's the Lakers' best prospect. He's just that in a different way. He's not going to be the guy that you know, NBA Finals, Game 6, you know, you need a bucket and you give the ball to Lonzo and he's going to make it happen.
He has shown an ability. He could go 6-for-24 in a Finals game. So, I don't know. I'm not saying he's ready to be Kobe, but...
So are you picking up the slack for Anthony with the Kobe shade, not with him out? Is that what you're doing?
No. See, this is my thing. I always compare these guys to Kobe nonstop just to irritate him. So I'm going to continue it just on the off chance he, like, listens to these pods on his plane home from Hawaii or something, just so that he just, like, is balling up his fists on the plane and getting mad because I made another Kobe comparison.
You know, every time now, like, so during exit interviews, Julius alluded to talking to Kobe a couple of years ago about perfecting your go-to moves. Like, the, you know, you're at a certain level when teams know what you're going to do and they can't stop it. And, you know, he alluded to Kobe. And so now every time a Laker player talks about Kobe, I think of Anthony. And I don't know if I want to associate Kobe Bryant with Anthony, but we're in that territory right now. I hope it's just
they both think they're the best at what they do.
Wow, that may also be shaded Kobe again. Wow, yeah. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, hey, I can do it here because here he won't quote tweet me and get his, like, Wikipedia change to say that I'm his son or something, or that he killed me. And, so, you know, I can do it here. There's no way he listens to Locked On Lakers. Getting back to...
Yeah, let's back on track. Yes. Yeah, so
go ahead.
Let me, as one of the older Lakers fans that are in the Lakers Twitter sphere and all of that, I go back to the mid-90s Lakers and remembering them very vividly, and one of the first teams that I really fell in love with. I was a little kid during the Showtime era, so I remember it, but it's just a different connection when you become like 12, 13 years old and going forward. The Magic retired suddenly in 1991, going into the 91-92 season, and then the Lakers had 2 years where they were the eighth seed in the playoffs. And those teams were not particularly fun. You had Worthy slowing down because of leg injuries. Byron Scott you know, ended up getting moved somewhere along the line. AC Green left to the Phoenix Suns, and it was this team where, like, they were competitive. They had vets and guys who were champions, but they were not going to be a title contender with that group. Then they missed the playoffs for the first time in ages in the 92-93 season. And that offseason, they drafted George Lynch with the 12th pick and Nick Van Exel at 37. And then the next year, actually, no, I'm sorry. That the rookie year for Van Exel is when they went 33 and 49. And Van Exel, it was kind of similar to Kuzma in that he was this later pick that just balled out, had a lot of heart. Like, the form back then before they were in Staples, absolutely loved him. Picked up Eddie Jones the next offseason, traded for Cedric Ceballos. And then you've got this, like, fun first, second round playoff team. They upset the Supersonics.
Anthony still maintains that's his favorite team ever. So he gets another mention on this podcast.
And so that is very similar to me to what this team is, and I could totally see myself being 14, 15 years old and watching this team and being like, oh my God, these guys are so fun. And I think next year, like, I think the Lakers are either in the playoffs next year, standing pat, or knocking on the door of it. And I could see young Laker fans falling in love with this team. We've also been sold on the idea of a young core for so long that these guys are kind of like our kids or our little brothers, or like, we've put so much investment in them that the idea of getting rid of them or trading them for a Kawhi, like, that's hard to swallow.
We both get it in our mentions all the time. Like, people want to let this young group grow. And I think I think it might have been you and I talking about this a little bit ago, but it's like, almost everyone, all fans and everyone around a team tends to overvalue their own players and, like, undervalue, like, opposing team's players. And so I think this is almost a case of that, where, like, it's not that these guys aren't good or they aren't worth continuing to keep as a young core, but every team thinks that their young core is the best young core in the league. And
right.
I think, like, you know, you have to take a step back sometimes and realize, like, these guys are really good, but they are going to need some help for this plan to work out.
Yeah, and that's how I see it. Like, when finishing the, like, mid-90s analogy is, none of those guys were on the team that actually won the first title of that era. Van Exel was gone, Eddie Jones, Cedric Ceballos, Vlade, Eldon Campbell, all those guys were gone, even though they were a super fun team. Now, I would argue that you don't get Shaq to sign on without that team being young and fun and him going, hey, we could do something with this group. He had the appeal of LA or not whatnot, but he wasn't going there if the Lakers were a 31 team.
Yeah.
And Kobe, you know, they traded Vlade for Kobe. And so the pieces that Eddie Jones ended up getting moved for Glenn Rice, who got moved for Horace Grant a year later. All of those pieces mattered along the way, but they weren't ultimately there.
It's
so,
like, hey, we saw the cover of the media guide last year. It was Nance, Clarkson, Russell, and Randall. And, like, all of those guys might be gone by the end of this summer.
And three of them already are.
Yeah.
Right? So so it's hard to tell fans, like, be invested in this young group and this young core and all of that, but be logical and cold-blooded about moving them. Like, you can't have it both ways. So
yeah.
I totally understand. But to me, when looking at this team projecting going forward, this particular core, I think, will be a good to really good team. That's not good enough to win an NBA title, though. So I would love to be wrong about that. I would love for them to be all be kept together and grow together and be a perennial title contender. But to me, like, if you're a title contender, you have to be one of the best three teams in the league. Do I see that with this group? I think they're probably more in the 5-8 range. Now, that's a long way away. There's plenty of things that can change in that time, but that's how I currently see it.
So I want to circle back, really. When you were talking about Lonzo a couple minutes ago, I didn't tell you we were going to talk about this beforehand, but, like, what do you feel like you learned most about him this year? Like, that maybe something that you didn't expect to, or, like, what do you feel like, what changed about your perception of him, like, going into the year versus coming out? Like, what was the biggest thing that you learned about him?
I'll give you one good and one bad thing.
Okay.
So the good thing, I didn't know he was going to be this impactful defensively. When I did the video for him on the defensive end, I said that I thought he'd be a top five steals guy at some point in his career, but I thought he had some on-ball weaknesses that – he was I just thought he was phenomenal on the defensive end. And I think that you can count the guards in the NBA that have a real impact on the defensive end on two hands. And I think he's already one of them, which been just an incredibly, you know, pleasant surprise. And I think that in tying that into like free agent pitch, you've got a guy in Lonzo that I think going forward can have a really tremendous game while taking five shots. And there aren't a lot of guys in the NBA that are like that. I watched Draymond Green, and he is able to be a star in a way that doesn't overlap with Steph and Clay and KD. And that's really important to have those type of guys. So that's, you know, on the positive side of things. On the negative side of things, I'm a little worried about his mental makeup. And that's a little more difficult to quantify.
Yeah, but I can't imagine we're going to be getting a film room video on Lonzo's mental makeup.
Yeah, but just like, yeah, exactly, yeah. But just seeing like him kind of mentally crumble when he would get, like, he didn't have normal cold stretches when he was, like, when he was bad, he was one of the worst shooters in NBA history at high volume. You know what I mean? And it was a lot of times it was like he's wide open and doubting himself. And then there's like, you know, I have concerns about his conditioning and his diet. And that was something that was from the conditioning perspective, Magic and Pelinka really hit home in the exit interviews. And I totally agree with them that that's
he always looks tired.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, but because he eats like a kid. Yeah. And even, you know, even Kyle Kuzma in a joking way, you know, he was asked about why do you take the leadership role. He was like, well, you know, Lonzo's 14 years old and B.I. has said 10 words all season. You know,
he's not wrong.
He's not wrong on those observations, even if it's to roast his boy, you know, like Lonzo. I think Lonzo needs to grow up a bit. I have sympathy for the upbringing that he had and how he had this kind of very dominant personality in LeVar that, I think guys like that, like when you're the son of someone like that, you can kind of fade into the background. But I think Lonzo has some growing up to do. I think that there's a lot there, but I think we're going to learn a lot about him in the work that he puts in this offseason. And I think that we'll learn a lot about him the first day of training camp next year. Like, what does he physically look like? That's going to tell us a lot about his mental makeup to me.
Yeah, I think in the same way that we learned a lot about Ingram, in the way that he, like, from, you know, the end of the season to summer league, he looked like a completely different, more polished player. And then he came into the season, like, he started out a little rough. I think that was more, I think, misuse of him than like his, like him hitting a sophomore slump. And I think they figured out how to use him, and he was incredibly impactful before he got hurt. And so I think if you're a Laker fan, you're hoping for similar growth from Lonzo. And if he shows that kind of growth in the areas that he needs to show growth in, then all of a sudden he's like a way, way better player, because he was already impactful kind of without that growth. Like, he wasn't like Ingram where he was a like an active negative for most of his first year.
Absolutely. I guess what I mean, I'm as bullish on Lonzo as anyone, and I've you know, said the reasons why many times. But for him to become, like, I called him last summer. I was like, this dude is the one. He's the guy that's going to be the guy. That, and it's not going to be in the conventional way that we think of that, which is great in because he, like I said, not going to overlap. But if he's going to actually develop into the guy, that's my biggest question mark, is his mental makeup. Does he have that to be able to make the steps that he needs to take to be able to become that? Because I think he definitely has the talent to be it.
Yeah, and we'll find out, like you said, a lot more about that when he heads into training camp, because he won't be playing in summer league. They already said that, so I can't imagine that'll change. The last thing that I have for you here, just a quick hitter. So I played this game. I've kind of been playing this game all week, but, like, out of the three guys, because obviously Randall, I think, is the outgoing free agent that everyone wants to re-sign most. Like, are you kind of in agreement on that?
Yes.
Yeah. So out of the three remaining guys, if you had to bring one back of Isaiah Thomas, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, or Brook Lopez, like, the Lakers have to bring one guy back on, I mean, I don't know, it'll probably depend on the market, but which one of those guys would you be most kind of bullish on bringing back?
If it's just a one-year deal, it would be Lopez. I think he really helped out both Randall and Ingram's game with his shooting ability. That opened up, you know, with Ingram, when defenses would ice or be in drop coverages, one of the ways to beat that is for your big to be able to pick and pop. And so that created space, you know, teams had to pick their poison on that, and that created space for Ingram. And then Julius, you know, it's funny, I just finished a Randall video, and in watching tape from two seasons ago, I was you know, the Mozgov contract, we always talk about the contract, but even from a basketball fit, like, who puts two bigs together who can't shoot threes in this day and age? Like,
yeah, I mean, the hope was that Randall would come in with a little bit better shooting, but, like, they should have known that, like, whether or not he was going to be able to come in and do that.
And, like, that mucked up so much of the works for Julius and for everybody else. Like, just rewatching that footage, it was just ghastly, and it made just life so much harder for everyone. That, you know, having a guy like Lopez who can shoot at that spot really helped things out. And now if you go small ball, you can put Kuz next to him. It's the same principle, right? You got to have a guy next to Julius that can shoot. But of all of them on a one-year deal, it would be him. If it was on, like, a 3 or 4 year deal, I'd say KCP at a reasonable rate.
Yeah, I think that's probably where I'd go, like, given those kind of constructs. Like, because KCP is the type of guy, like, I mean, you can never have too many versatile, switchy wings or whatever. And whereas Lopez, like you said, like, I'm not sure how he's going to continue to age, but, like, on a one-year deal, I think that'd be a reasonable, like, plan B or C or however you want to look at it. Like, if the Lakers just don't sign the guys that they're hoping to sign, bring back Lopez on a big one-year deal, kind of a la KCP this year, like, I think would be a decent plan, not just because of how he'd help on the court, but then next summer, if you're recruiting these guys, you can re-sign Lopez for, like, a pay cut using it. I think they would get his bird rights at that point, right?
That's correct.
Yeah,
they already have Lopez's bird rights because they traded for him, but this summer, if they do sign someone, they'll have to renounce him.
Yeah.
And then if they re-sign him to that, like, room exception or, yeah, the room exception type deal, then the next summer, yeah, they'd still retain his rights.
Okay. So I guess, I mean, we'll see on all of this stuff. It's going to be obviously, like I feel like we keep saying this, but this summer I think it's actually true. Like, this is going to be the biggest summer for the Lakers in a long time. I mean, last summer the draft was a big thing, but I don't think anybody was really expecting them to make a huge splash in free agency. Like, this summer, they have that one coming up, and I think that that's going to be a far bigger, like harbinger for their future, I guess, is how well they do this offseason, free agency or trades or whatever. Like, this is going to play a large part in setting the course forward.
Totally agree.
All right. Well, Pete, thank you for coming on. I know you are. I appreciate the time. I know that you have your own podcast to record today, so I'm not going to keep you any longer. Is there anything else that you want to plug before we get out of here?
Nah, man. If you're listening to this, you probably watch my stuff or hit me up on Twitter. So it's all good.
All right. Well, then that'll do it for this episode of Locked On Lakers. Next week, Anthony will be back. We will be doing another week of shows together. And, as always, you can find the show on iTunes, Audio Boom, or sorry, not Audio Boom anymore, Megaphone, Panoply, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, anywhere podcasts, like anywhere you get your podcasts, you can find us. If you can't, then go ahead and tweet at Anthony or I, and we will see if we can get it on that platform. And have a good weekend, everybody. We will talk to you on the other side.